Propagating truth in a world of lies. You are listening to the John Age Project.
You have now entered into the Anomic Age, and I am your host, John Age. Thank you so much for joining us today on the program. As you might expect, we have a great show for you today. We are continuing our conversation with Alan Myers today, talking about FedEd, all things Federal Reserve, and of course, we have another guest, which I'm very excited to talk to, Mr. Rat Skates. If you don't know who that is, brace yourself. He'll be our second guest here on the second hour of the Anomic Age. So hold on to your hats. But before we get into any of that stuff, we got to get into the usual suspect stuff. We got to talk a little bit about the news, the insanity, the depravity that is, sadly, our current state of affairs here in land of the sheep, home of the slave. Before we go any further, please make sure you check out AnomicAge.com. For all things me, all things our guests, make no mistake about it, you can find out how to contact the show. You can contact our guests if they have that information available. You'll definitely have their website and link information. Perhaps most importantly to the well-being of the program, if you look on the homepage, bottom right, you'll see where you can make a donation to PayPal. Please do that. I encourage you to do so. This show's not cheap. It's not easy. And in order for the ship to continue sailing, we must have some fuel. So please do so. You can also sign up for the newsletter down there at the bottom. You can download the Android app, the iPhone app. You can check out the most recent guests. All kinds of good stuff. And of course, there's a news feed at the bottom too. So if you're wondering, how bad is it? You can look on the news feed and it'll tell you. That's how bad it really is. It's pretty sick out there. Speaking of sick, oh boy, we had to go out again with the fam this weekend, so that was always disturbing. We went to that same store, which I said I didn't want to go to again. I got drugged to it again. You know the one, red and khaki, big bullseye on the outside of the store. Yeah, that's the one. Anyway, I thought it was bad enough last weekend, I suppose, when I was there. I just sort of happened to bump into some things. And this week it was even worse, to be honest with you. I didn't even put these on my computer yet. They're still on the phone. My daughter was having a good time playing with dolls, and I was sitting there just trying to maintain while I was looking at these toys for children. And you'll see a theme. I'm not even going to discuss it immediately. I'll just sort of roll through the names and premise of these games, and then we'll discuss afterwards, okay? All right, class, here goes. This one's called Don't Step in It. And the box has appears to be a boy and some children and a dog. And the child appears to be on the precipice of stepping into poo-poos. This one, Don't Step in It. But wait, there's more. There's another one here called Doggy Doo. Different game, totally different game. Doggy Doo. This one has a dog on it, cartoon dog, of course, and he's apparently got some gas and some poo-poo happening there on the game, the box cover. But my personal favorite, as far as being the most reprehensible game that I saw over the weekend for children, this one's called Poop the Potato. And if you're thinking, maybe John's kind of losing it. He must be exaggerating. These can't be real. No, no. Poop, P-O-O-P, Poop the Potato. And this game consists of a brown bucket, not quite a 5-gallon bucket, it's a little smaller, with the words Poop the Potato on it. But it gets even more revolting as you peer onto the back panel because it shows a young lad squatting over said bucket. And I guess attempting to unclench the potato from his buttocks. At some point, you just don't know what else to say, do you? Did I discuss this one last week? I must not have. There's another one called Pull My Finger. And it has a cartoon monkey on it that appears to have some sort of flatulence. And he's got his finger outstretched to some little boys and girls. Pull My Finger. Another great game for your children. So if you're sort of going, what in the world, is this real? Yes, it's real. You can go to your favorite box store, I'm sure, and buy these games this weekend for your children. But you should be picking up on the theme. The theme being poo-poo and feces. And again, you know, these are normal functions, but you have to ask yourself and wonder, why are they pushing this towards children? Why are they pushing this dirty potty humor towards a younger and younger audience? What's the deal? And I would address that by saying, well, the deal is what it's always been. The deal is to indoctrinate and corrupt children at a younger and younger age. That's the plan. That's the program. I mean, if you look this up, I mean, this was released several years ago, that this was all the plan of this modern art. That, you know, the CIA was pushing this modern art. Yes, we've got a crucifix in urine, and it's art. We've got Jack Dripper's work where he just, you know, splatters a canvas with a paintbrush, and it's art. And the more revolting, the better. And that was a plan, just to get people acclimated and see if the general public, to pull a psychological experiment, to see if the general public would accept these things as being artistic and being normal and being okay. And they did. So like everything else, they've gradually shifted the Overton window a little bit more and a little bit more with every year, every generation, and to be honest, every passing day. Until now, the average American's going, sure, I'm going to buy my kid, what is it, Poop the Potato? Where he can unclench his buttocks and I guess release this little potato into a bucket? I don't... That's sick. Every game that I just mentioned on this episode and the previous that I found at the same place is all disturbing mess. And it just goes back to the mental disorder that is... liberalism, communism. I just call it communism. I don't play the semantical games where we're supposed to say Democrat and liberal and democratic socialist and it's whatever. It's communism. They're trying to encroach on your children to corrupt them and destroy their lives. That's the plan. And somebody out there saying it's just a game, John, calm down. It's not a game. These aren't just games. These are mechanisms for control. They're mechanisms for corrupting the mind and moving your little thought processes over to things that, you know, it's children. Come on. Poop the potato. Really? Disgusting. I could talk about this ad nauseum because it's quite nauseating, but I'll try to reel myself back in just a bit. I'm going to run through some news items because we've got a lot of information from our guests. We got two guests today. And plenty of information from each of them, so I don't want to bore you with just me regurgitating news headlines. But I've picked a few which you may find particularly irritating. Here we go. CDC caught flying diseased caravan migrants into U.S. for medical treatment. And this is coming from Right of the Right. And this is, again, an older article. I've intentionally chosen two particularly older articles today because I don't think you get it. At least if you do get it, you're not being vigilant about it. This one's from November 28, 2018. And again, I know you're going, this is an old article, John. Why are you telling us this? Because you didn't get it the first time. So, CDC is flying in. If they were doing it in 2018, I guarantee they're still doing it now. They're flying in migrants. Oh, no, you mean decoder ring, illegal aliens that have no business being here, nor receiving any funding, nor medical care, nor anything else from the good old US of A, but we're doing it. According to FAA flight data, a plane registered to the Centers for Disease Control landed in lovely San Diego to pick up diseased migrants at the border and fly them to Georgia, where they will receive medical care paid for by the United States taxpayers. Let's just stop it right here. So let me get this straight. We're paying for these people. Meanwhile, in reality, there is record numbers of veterans killing themselves every day. And it's gotten so bad now they're actually doing it in front of the VA as some sort of final statement to the complete and utter insanity that we have going on. Oh, but wait, there's more. But they're also, when they do get care, they're having to wait hours each day and then months and sometimes several months just to get into the visit and then waiting there for hours and then basically just getting a whole lot of bad health care. I'll try to reel myself in and censor myself a little bit because I don't want to become that guy. So let's move on. Here we go. This one's just disturbing and nauseating. Pedophile teacher, 78, admits molesting dozens of young boys at rural schools during 30-year campaign of abuse. 30-year campaign of abuse. This scoundrel was destroying children's lives. Vincent Henry Reynolds' abuse spanned 30 years and started in the 1960s. He abused boys under 16 at schools in regional Victoria, including Wadaga. This is in Australia, folks. I'm sorry I didn't just lead in with that. This is in Australia. He grabbed a boy's hand and put it on his penis while instructing him to rub it. The now 78-year-old pled guilty to 42 counts of indecent assault. I was going to say, I'm sorry I even read that, because that was very disturbing, and if you have your child in the room, I hope that the child's no longer in the room, because that's sick, and depraved, and disgusting. For my money, I think we all know what should happen to people that are like that, but I'll digress. Anyway, let's move on. Oh, here's what I actually did want to discuss there with this thing. If you haven't heard this before, Dr. Anthony Kidman. Yeah, that Kidman from Australia. You know, Nicole Kidman's father, that guy. He was an Australian psychologist who died of a heart attack a few years back. He died coincidentally right when it was coming to light that there were a lot of allegations that, let me replay that so I don't get sued by the Kidman clan. Allegations that dear sweet Anthony was involved in pedophilia rings in Canada and murder of children, and obviously a pretty high up in the global cabal of all things depraved in Australia. But it's okay. I mean, he died of a heart attack before any of this could really come to light in 2014. So we will continually have to say alleged until something more conclusive comes to light. If you really dig into this, you will see more and more evidence than I'm really going to give you right now. I don't want to spill the beans, so to speak, on the whole thing right now because I'm trying to condense the show for time. But please look into Anthony Kidman and pedophilia. If you just Google that, you'll find a wealth of information. What else we got? Ex-CNN contributors reveal network openly hates conservatives. And this is from WesternJournal.com, author Jack Davis, May 27th, 2019. I can't believe what they're saying here. So they're trying to say that CNN openly hates conservatives? That's in quotes here on the main page of the article. This must be some sort of hoax. That can't be real. I just can't be. I don't believe that. I don't believe for a minute that CNN openly hates conservatives. I mean, that would be like saying bears defecate in the woods, or the water in the ocean is wet, or the sun is really hot. This has got to be some sort of sham. I don't believe it. This can't be true. Let's see what it says. When it comes to President Trump, CNN is even more unbalanced than ever before, according to former CNN contributors who have parted ways with the network, saying its focus has shifted exclusively to battling Trump. Battle on, CNN, battle on. Meanwhile, the American people will do nothing. So, it's a battle against no one, I guess. Oh boy, what do we got here? This is another one I was going to cover, and I forgot to, but luckily I found it in the feed here. And if you're seeing me, I'm seeing myself here in the camera. It looks like I'm wearing like a big black blob or some sort of high turtleneck. That's not the case. It's just a black shirt. It's a short sleeve shirt. And I realize I'm getting lowbrow today because I'm usually wearing the suit and the tie and the whole nine yards. It's unbelievably hot here in NC. So, yeah, not happening today. Here we go. This is another one from the Western Journal. Remember Gillette's anti-masculinity commercial? That's got nothing on its newest ad. Oh boy, Sean Hare. This is May 28, 2019. The best a man can get? That's a phrase I could enjoy celebrating. After all, I teach my two sons that to be a man is a good thing. What a bigot. It's good to fully embrace God's design for masculinity. It is good to wield strength for good rather than be ashamed of it. What a complete nutbag this guy is. He must be some sort of misogynist, racist, transphobe, evil creature. Let's move on. It is good to channel those traits inherent to masculinity for the benefit of yourself and those around you, and of course, to let all things be tempered in love. But rather than actually celebrating the good side of masculinity, Gillette recently ran a cringeworthy ad shaming stereotypes of males being bad. Gillette's ads took a progressive and pretentious stand against bullying, groping, and objectification of women, things that every decent man since the beginning of time has taken a stand against, you stupid bigots. If that's Gillette's idea of cutting edge, I fear that its razor strategy may be... The backlash was quick and severe. Come on, let's get to the good stuff here. Let me skip down. But rather than question if progressive themes might backfire, Gillette's newest ad takes progressivism and identity politics to an entirely new level. Hallelujah, Gillette! I'm going to go out and buy the $85 pack of Gillette from my big box store right now. The ad above, which was released Thursday, shows a teen who claims to have undergone a transition. Transition. Having a first shave. Well, isn't that cute and lovely? Just lovely. Oh boy, so the bottom line here, the crux of this whole spiel, is that Gillette's doing the usual old SJW garbage that it's done in the previous ads of identity politics and blah, 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 blah. Now we've got a transitioned person transitioning into shaving for the first time. And his dad's there, and he's just embracing the love and diversity and all kinds of glee-filled happiness as his daughter is shaving. Oh boy, Gillette's really done it this time. Thanks, Gillette, for once again destroying more normal things in life. So, I'm going to stop it there, folks. I could keep going. There's a lot more articles to get into. There was one particularly, I don't have it pulled up in front of me right now, but it was from Statesville, North Carolina. I think this was a little like middle of the road last week. It was on Fox. It was on a lot of other news outlets. But since I'm not reading it, I'll just give you the synopsis. Bottom line, as a man that owned a, not a campground, but I guess someone that sells campers and RVs, had a huge, huge American flag, and I guess that was much to the chagrin of the town. So they told him to take his flag down. And he said, I don't think so. Keeping the flag up. So I'm not sure how that ended. As far as I know, the flag's still flying. They haven't SWAT teamed the guy's house yet, or taken his flag down, or, you know, Roger Stone to the guy at 3 in the morning or something. But I'm sure it's coming. It's bound to. Because here in Land of the Sheep, Home of the Slave, we just let the government tell us what to do and when to do it. And we don't do anything about it. We sit on our hands, we write stuff to each other, and we hope we're not the next person to be unpersoned, I guess, here in Land of the Sheep, Home of the Slave. Well, well. Oh, I would be remiss if I didn't also address Memorial Day. Memorial Day was just yesterday. So it's definitely a day to memorialize those lost defending our nation in all wars. So if you haven't taken a few moments to observe that and sort of gather that it's not just about sitting around the house with the fam, barbecuing, or otherwise just not observing the day for what its observance was meant to be for, please make sure you sort of sit down and perhaps think about all those things that Memorial Day is supposed to commemorate in your, free time. That being said, thanks for joining us today. We will transition. We will Gillette our way right into our first guest, Alan Myers, in just a mere matter of moments. We are pleased to welcome Mr. Alan Myers back onto the Anomic Age today. In case you somehow missed it, which I don't know how, Mr. Myers is a CPA and a forensic accountant. Spent the last 8+ years studying everything Federal Reserve, monetary systems, money, the banking schemes, the whole nine yards. So we've been going through his book, Fed Ed, or his pamphlet, publication, Fed Ed. We've been going through week by week, sort of taking a very nice bite-sized chunk that everyone should be able to digest and just sort of picking it apart week by week. So we're up to sort of the home stretch now. So if you've missed the first two segments, please go back, anomicage.com, the last two episodes, and you'll see segments 1 and 2, and now we're into the home stretch with segment 3 of Fed Ed, which begins today at module number 11. What is a Ponzi scheme? It's another one of those words that I feel like a lot of people think they know what the heck they're talking about. But myself, I even figured this out a few years ago. Like, I didn't know what the heck a Ponzi scheme really was. I mean, I had this idea of a pyramid scheme and an Amway thing and all this weird stuff. But when you actually go into it, what the heck is a Ponzi scheme? Where'd the term come from? Who's a Ponzi? What's a Ponzi? So all that and more we'll get into today with Mr. Alan Myers. Thank you again, sir, for being on the program.
John, thank you very much for having me on your program. Happy to be here. Happy to discuss Fed Ed. Today we'll be first topic is, what is a Ponzi scheme? To open, I'd like to share a quote regarding this. When plunder becomes a way of life for a group of men living together in society, they create for themselves in the course of time a legal system that authorizes it and a moral code that glorifies it. That's Frederick Bastiat. He lived from 1801 to 1850. When plunder becomes a way of life. Well, in essence, that is what a Ponzi scheme is. It's a way of plunder. Ponzi is named after Carlo or Charles Ponzi. The original Ponzi scheme came into existence in around December 1919. And what Ponzi was able to do is there was a lot of instability in the European currencies, and he used postal reply coupons where you could do arbitrage. You could buy them in one environment and sell them for more in another. And this was the idea. Yet once his scheme got going, he didn't do any of that anymore. He just had so much money coming in that he would pay these outrageous returns to the original investors, which would prompt more money coming in. And he kept doing this over and over again. But there was no real life, legitimate, for-profit trade or business. That's at the heart of a Ponzi scheme. Now, some Ponzi schemes may have some minimal real life business activity, but overall, it's you're convincing people that your fraudulent scam is a great business opportunity. That's how you keep getting the money coming in and coming in. As all Ponzi's, and the most famous now would be Bernie Madoff, who's doing 150 years for running the world's largest private Ponzi scheme, somewhere around $60 billion. He did the same thing. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the author's name, but there was one man who reported Bernie Madoff to the SEC 5 times in 8 years. They never busted him. They actually, the SEC was so sharp that they went to see him in New York. They went to his office, but they only went to one floor. They didn't know he had 2 floors. So they didn't look at the whole operation, and they just wrist slapped him for something. The only reason that Madoff eventually got caught is because Madoff told his sons and his sons told the FBI. So it was the FBI that arrested Bernie Madoff, not the SEC. Back to Ponzi's. As I said, when you don't have a for-profit business, then selling investments, acquiring investors, is going to lead to the inevitable end of any Ponzi, which it's going to fail because you're going to run out of new money.
Gotcha.
Well, we have a national government, and I'm all for the national government, limited though. We have a national government, and our national government sells treasury bills, bonds, and notes. Different names for different time periods. The notes are multiple years, the bonds are 5 years, and the bills are short term. Anyway, U.S. government sells these to investors, lenders, and they're considered AAA rated, highest rating you can get. Yet there's one problem, and I'll pose this as a question to you, John. What for-profit business is the national government in? It's not.
That's true. I was thinking, I don't see one.
There is one de minimis activity, and that is where the mint coins, commemorative coins, and sells them for a profit. Given how small that is compared to the actual size of the federal government, I would say, generally speaking, the federal government has no for-profit business. And people might come back and say, talk about taxation. Well, taxation isn't profit-making. Taxation is profit-taking.
That's what I was thinking. They're just taking your profit. They're not actually making their own.
And that's why I don't like it when people refer to funds going into the government as tax revenue. It's not revenue. They didn't earn it. They took it.
Yeah, it's tax theft.
It's inflow, because the funds that go out are referred to by the government as outflows. So if what goes out is an outflow, what goes in is an inflow. Upshot is, Our federal government is running the world's largest public Ponzi scheme at over $22 trillion. And I think we've spoken before, but it's probably good to reiterate it. For most people, trillion, yes, they know it's a number, but it's kind of just a word. The number is 1 followed by 12 zeros. Most people probably haven't even written 1 trillion once. To give you an idea of the magnitude of this number, and to put it in what I call understandable units, for example, 1 trillion seconds. A second is a snap of the fingers. 1 trillion seconds is 31,709 years. That's 1 trillion. Okay, you're not going to live that long, so maybe you decide you want to get some exercise and you want to walk a trillion inches. Take a look at a ruler. See how short 1 inch is. If you were to walk 1 trillion inches, you would walk a distance equal to 633 times around the Earth at the equator. One lap, 24,500 miles. Okay, that's not going to happen. Last one, miles. You want to be the first one to get the trillion-mile frequent flyer card. Just a trillion miles, no big deal. If you were to fly a trillion miles, you would fly a distance equal to approximately 107 round trips from Earth to Pluto and back. That's 1 trillion. Our national treasury debt is 22 plus trillion. It is unpayable. And the only reason it is serviceable, meaning that the payments can be made on it, is because the interest rate is so historically low. This is a debt that is going to implode.
And the word I always hear is that they are artificially keeping this interest rate low. Is that an accurate statement?
Well, when you say artificially, I mean the interest rate is low. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's low by historical standards. It's low by most standards. If you were looking at 4, 5, 6% interest on treasuries, keeping in mind the treasury that is interest rates is tied to the market to a degree, well, if you had a higher rate, the debt would become unserviceable. They couldn't make the payments. One of the things that is going to push this to the unpayable, unserviceable point is that Social Security is about to go from the way I term it is from a net buyer to a net seller. All the funds that come into the general fund because of Social Security, taxes taken out of your paycheck before you ever get it, has always been more than actually was spent to the retirees. Well, this year or next year, that is going to change. And what's coming in is going to be less than what's going out, which means in the past, all the extra funds that the Social Security had was used to buy treasuries. National government had a ready buyer. That's about to change because the amount that has to go out to beneficiaries is going to be greater than what's coming in, which means Social Security is going to be a net seller, which begs the question, where's the U.S. government going to get more buyers to buy what the Social Security is no longer going to buy?
That's a pretty scary prospect.
Yes, and by 2035, it's estimated by the government that Social Security will run out of what they call funds. That is, their investments in treasuries. They'll run out.
So I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this question, but what is that going to mean for the average Joe public out there who's counting on this retirement?
Average Joe and Jane public. The new word I use, that way nobody says I'm being vulgar, is the word skewered. You can imagine the word that I would be using. What happens is right now, of course, a lot of people are counting on Social Security. People use this word entitlement, which I do not like. You took my money without asking me. You took my money with no options. You changed the amount that will be taxed. You changed the percentage that which will be taxed. And now when you give it back to me, you say it's an entitlement?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I am entitled to it because you took it and you promised to give it back. But it sounds like, you know, we're getting a freebie.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not. The problem is that as time progresses, Social Security will not be a net buyer, will be a net seller. It's going to be over the next 10, 15 years, it's going to be hanging on its fingernails. Depending on how many people do stay alive and the demands that are placed on the funds. If the national government is not able to make good on all these, well, Social Security is going to get hammered. Not only that, but think of all the public and private pension plans that were required to be investors in treasuries because they were AAA rated and pension plans needed to invest in things that were safe. Well, these public and private pension plans are already seriously, seriously underfunded. They've made promises they can't keep. And that's based on the treasuries not going bad. The treasuries go bad, you can see what the landscape's going to look like for the retirees. It is going to be awful, just awful. And that's why we need to change our monetary system, at least a certain specific aspect of it, which we will eventually get to. But to drive it home, if you don't understand, if you don't feel the problem, you're unlikely to do what's necessary to fix it. And that's what this whole process is about, is helping people understand just how bad the system is, even though we currently don't feel that immediate pressure. It's there. It's coming.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an issue because I feel like a lot of the people that are not in the retirement demographic are going, oh, it'll work out. You know, they're playing the kick the can down the road thing. It might suck for my parents and grandparents, but it'll work out. It'll work out. So I don't feel as bad now that I have no retirement or insurance. I feel like, okay.
You can kick it down the road, but eventually you can't because it falls off a cliff. And, if, you know, yeah, I got to do something in a couple of weeks, but eventually those couple of weeks go by and then you have to do it.
True.
So we play a game in our minds with time distance, but eventually time has a way of clicking off and taking you right to the place you didn't want to be. Not understanding this system doesn't make it less bad. And not understanding this system means you're not putting yourself in a position to take the corrective action to actually prevent what will absolutely happen if we don't fix it. So that's Ponzi scheme. Any questions?
Sadly, it makes sense to me.
Okay. Well, that's good. Our next topic is, and when I say Fed, I'm talking about the Federal Reserve System, why the Fed must be replaced. And to open, I would like to recite a quote. The Federal, and I've checked this many times from more than one source. The Federal Reserve definitely caused the Great Depression by contracting the amount of currency in circulation by one-third from 1929 to 1933. Milton Friedman, a Nobel Prize winner. In fact, in 2002, at an event commemorating the 90th birthday of Milton Friedman, then Ben Bernanke gave a very long speech. And right at the end of it, Milton Friedman and another PhD economist, Anna Schwartz, wrote a very in-depth study of money in the U.S. from the 1800s to 1960. And Ben Bernanke says, right at the end of the presentation, he says to Milton and Anna, Milton Friedman, Anna Schwartz. To Milton and Anna, regarding the Great Depression, you're right, we did it. We're very sorry, but thanks to you, we won't do it again. In that one sentence, he substantiates the quote I just gave you, and he lies by saying they're not going to do it again. At least that's my look on it.
Yeah, the thanks to you seems to indicate that just since we got caught, since like a world-renowned economist caught us and went public with it, we'll try to curtail our ways. That seems to be what it's saying.
Well, think about this. Let's say you are the top financial guy at a really, really big company, and you so mess up the finances, the company almost goes BK, bankrupt. Do you have a job the next day?
I would not bet on it. I would bet my stuff would be in a box out by the curb.
You'd be lucky if it was in a box.
Yes, that's true. I'd be lucky if it was a box.
The Fed definitely caused the Great Depression, the worst financial catastrophe in this country, and it still has the job. Anyway, so why must the Fed be replaced? There's a thing called the dual mandate, and this is what the Fed is supposed to do. Now, what's interesting about the dual mandate is it has three components. Don't ask me why. The three components are maximum employment of people and resources. The second one is stable prices. And the third is having moderate long-term interest rates. I want to focus on stable prices. Keep in mind, the Fed caused the Great Depression. One of its targets is inflation at 2%. Well, inflation kind of sounds benign, not a big deal, but inflation is really loss of purchasing power. And as an example, in 1914, that's when the Fed went operational, one 1914 dollar had the purchasing power of 100 1914 pennies. Makes sense.
Absolutely.
$1, 100 pennies. Today's dollar, with all the inflation that we've experienced over the 100 plus years, today's dollar has the purchasing power of two, maybe three 1914 pennies, which is another way of saying things don't cost more today because they're so much more valuable. It's because the dollar buys so much less.
That's a huge elephant in the room. I feel like that's another one that nobody really grasps, because you'll talk to the average person, the average millennial especially, and they're just like, oh yeah, stuff used to cost less. But they don't put the pieces of the puzzle together, like you just said, to figure out what the heck, why does it cost more to buy that pack of gum in 2019 than it did in 1980 or 1960 or whatever.
Right. Keep in mind, the Fed definitely caused the Great Depression. One of their mandates is stable prices. To me, stable means constant, consistent, not ever increasing. Well, when the purchasing power of the dollar is constantly decreasing, in fact, they target loss of purchasing power, then you can't have stable prices, which means it's failing its mandate. Go on and on. The bottom line is the Fed is a failure. Total, absolute failure in what we have in our monetary system. We've had so many economic disruptions since we've had the Fed, including the dot-com event, that little blurb in 2008, and we're on our way to it again. The Fed must be replaced, because this monetary system, by design, is a failure. It can't be repaired. It can't be reformed. It can't be fixed. It's broken by design. It must be replaced. Which leads, any questions?
No, I mean, it would make sense to me, which kind of goes back to that whole audit the Fed thing that I hear a lot of. I'm like, well, that's nice, but why don't we just do away with it? We know it's fouled up. We know there's no way to fix it. And it's like a car that's missing a wheel. Like,
keep in mind that when Dr. Paul and Dr. Paul talk about auditing the Fed, they're not talking financial statement audits. They're talking about operational audits. For me, because you can, each of the 12 Federal Reserve banks have their financial statements audited by one of the big national firms every year. You can find them on the web.
Gotcha.
For me, understanding the basics of money creation and an extinguishment, which we'll get to next week, if you understand that, you don't need to audit the Fed. Okay? It's bad. It's wrong. If you walked up to a stream and you don't know anything about science, okay, you don't know anything about science, but you look at the stream and down from where you are, all you see is dead grass, dead fish, dead frogs. Are you going to assume the water is clean?
Not if you have a brain, no.
Are you going to say, you know what, I don't know what's doing this, but I'm not drinking this water. I'm not walking through it because I don't know. Well, when you look at the way the system works, you don't have to know every little detail to know the system is not functioning for our benefit at all. And the now, just to finish this up regarding why the Fed must be replaced, you're probably familiar with the character Dirty Harry.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, to take a quote, because if you're not for changing this system, given what we've already talked about, another way of saying, if you're just going to live day to day, moment to moment, you might want to ask yourself this one very important question. Do you feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
That's it.
I don't. So now we get to, since I'm advocating for a replacement, somebody might ask, well, Alan, what are we going to replace it with? And to quote Milton Friedman one more time, if you put the federal government in charge of the Sahara Desert, in 5 years, there'd be a shortage of sand. Milton Friedman. So what do we do to replace the Fed? And again, we'll get into the nitty-gritty on this next week. The whole system comes down to who has the power to create and extinguish money and who gets the benefit. Right now, the power to create is with the banks. Now, I'm not, as I said before, I'm not anti-bank. We need banks. I'm not anti-bank building or bank employees. We need them. I just don't want them to have the power to create our money. I want that returned to the people. Because it's people who originally created the concept of money, developed it, matured it. For me, the system that would replace it, and we could use different terms, but just the overall theme is that there would be only one bank, one institute in the country. This, and I'll call it an institute, because sometimes people get confused if I say bank and then they think it's, you know, it's just a regular bank. It's not. This institute or institution is owned, controlled, directed, monitored, reports to the people of this country. This is ours. And it is the sole creator of funding or money in our system. With that power, consolidated for the benefit of we the people, we, through that institution, can fund our federal government based on approved budgets. And they, and the federal government, therefore, would have no need to tax or borrow. It would get all its funding from the people. I think this is wonderful. The IRS doesn't go away because we abolished it. The IRS goes away because it's not needed. The national debt could be paid down. The Fed would go away. All its assets would become property of the government, which could be liquidated and help pay down the debt because they've been such an absolute failure in their job. The One of the other jobs that the national institution would have is it would maintain the money supply by tracking the real economy so we don't have inflation. We're keeping it at bare minimum. Then again, let's say we had a national emergency, God forbid, of course, and we didn't have one Katrina, we had three or something, you know, just horrendous. The people of this country would want the federal government to get involved and get active. It would need to have emergency funding based on approval out of Congress. The federal government could get a new additional emergency funding from the national institution, spend it into circulation to get the job done. Now, we don't want to leave that extra money in circulation because that would be inflationary. Because once all the jobs, all the work's done, the economy is going to slow down. The national institution can institute a sales or consumption tax in different parts of the country, depending on where the money was spent and where it's in circulation. The purpose of this sales tax is not to generate, quote unquote, a revenue. It's to reduce the money supply. Once the money supply is in harmony with the economic level, it goes away. It's simply a way of taking too much water out of the barrel, so to speak. At the end of the day, we have a stable monetary system that does not require our federal government to tax or borrow. We'll be able to pay off the debt instead of having it unpayable and serviceable. We can completely eliminate or severely limit any kind of future inflation. And that ultimately, all of this will make the American dollar even stronger and help maintain its position as the reserve currency of the world. In a nutshell, that's my thought on what we can do to replace the Fed.
That sounds like a great idea to me.
Thank you.
Just our money being our money again, and we the people having control over our lives, so to speak, would be amazing.
Exactly. What we've lost track of, and I guess I want to thank overall, in a very general term, public education for failing us in this point. We don't learn financial literacy. We don't learn about the monetary system. For me, the monetary system is the most important system in the country because everything is connected to, through, by, and with it. Nobody escapes its influence, and it works against us. Yet where is this education? And I'm starting in high school. Where's the education? Doesn't exist. And none of this is that hard to grasp once you get past some of the terminology, some of the concepts, and just study it a little bit. It's not, I mean, we're not talking quantum mechanics here.
That's it.
Ultimately, before the system would be replaced, somebody's going to ask, well, if we replace this, what's the benefit? Yeah. And I've learned painfully, there are two questions that ultimately need to be answered. And they are, because this is what somebody is going to ask you, whether they do or not, it's in their head. They're going to be saying to themselves, or possibly to you, why should I care what's in it for me?
That's it. Yeah, that's everybody's bottom line, especially today.
And, well, let's talk about what's in it for you. Obviously, not having the system implode is a huge benefit. But the more direct benefits of a new monetary system, I'll get to you after I read this quote. Whoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce. That tells me, if you believe this quote, we the people are going to want to control the volume and the creation of money because of the position that it allows those that do to be in. This quote came from James A. Garfield, I believe 20th president of the United States, shot in July of 1881, died in September of 1881. He was very outspoken on this topic. Who would benefit from this new monetary system? We the people.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And what are the benefits? Well, the benefit, number one benefit is that money is created for our ultimate united benefit, because we can fund our national government without it having any need or ability to tax or borrow. I think that's pretty neat right there.
I couldn't even imagine getting all the money I'm supposed to get out of a check. Good grief.
So that, again, money has to be created in the society. The problem is money is not created for the benefit of the people. We can unite that benefit and fund our federal government without taxation or borrowing. IRS goes away. National debt will be paid off eventually. Social Security won't go bust. Private and public pension plans won't lose out because their treasury investments went bust. I think that's huge.
You would think, again, everybody in the nation needs to hear this and understand it.
And the other benefits are we can reduce the national debt quickly, because any treasury debt held by the Fed would just go to vapor. It's not going to be – it just goes away. All the assets of the Fed would be sold, and those proceeds could be used to pay down the national debt. Ultimately, we're the beneficiaries of the new system. We get rid of or severely limit any future inflation, because the monetary system's supply is controlled for the benefit of the country, which means we want to keep the supply sufficient to keep the economic level going. We don't want it too little. We don't want it too much. We want it just right.
That'd be nice.
Now, finally, how do we get this done? Well, it's actually not that complicated. And the quote I've chosen for Module 15 is, I'm sure you've heard of this one.
Absolutely.
Very short and to the point. The price of freedom is eternal vigilance. Our freedom is at stake. Our liberty, our rights, our way of life. Because we are losing control. We have lost control, and we're about to lose complete control over our monetary system. Which brings up one more quote, and I've probably said it before, and it gives you an idea of how long this topic has been under discussion. The quote is, note the words conquer and enslave. There's two ways to conquer and enslave a nation. One is by the sword, the other by debt. We're being conquered by debt. That came from John Adams, second president of the United States, signer of the Declaration of Independence. They've been talking about this for a long time. What's the process? Simple. It started in D.C. It has to end in D.C. We have to tell the people who allegedly represent us, and I call them – hold on a second. I call them elected employees. That's lowercase e, lowercase e.
I like it.
That's what they are. And we're citizen owners, capital C, capital O. And it's time the owners tell the employees what to do and how to get it done, because they're not. Most people, you could get this done probably in 10 minutes a day, sitting on your couch in your jammies. Make three phone calls, you send three emails to the people who you want to represent you in D.C. and tell them, repeal all the Federal Reserve Acts and all their amendments, take the power to create money away from banks, leave the banks alone other than that, and get the new National Institute going. That's it. And then in your spare time, you tell your family. You tell your neighbors, you tell your friends, you tell your coworkers, you tell everybody we got to get this done. We got to get this done now. We don't have that much free time left because, as we talked about earlier, the Treasury debt is over $22 trillion. It's a Ponzi scheme, and the national government somehow imagines it's going to find more lenders to actually increase the debt. What happens when the world says, no mas, no mas?
We're going to have a whole lot of insurance problems, a whole lot of retirement, Social Security problems. I mean, you name it.
It would be absolutely horrendous. Yet the federal government, and I don't care who's in administration. I've studied the national debt for some time, and I can give you some interesting statistics if you want it. The lowest the Treasury debt's ever been was 1835, and it was under $34,000. That's Andrew Jackson's time. The last time the national debt decreased year by year was 1957. The first trillion debt was approximately 1981, which meant it took 190 to 191 years to get the first trillion. In the follow-on 38 years, we've added 21 trillion. Does that sound sustainable? No.
Yeah, that should be a huge red flag to everybody.
In the 24 years from the first day of Clinton to the last day of Obama, 24 years, three full presidential terms, round numbers, the Treasury debt went from $4.5 trillion to just under $20 trillion, basically $15.5 trillion in 12 years, which meant on the first day of Trump's administration, 78% of the Treasury debt was acquired in the prior 24 years. Does this really sound sustainable?
Not a bit.
And the largest increase in those 24 years took place during the Obama years at over $9 trillion. Did you hear anybody bark about it?
Not a bit.
It was just, oh, we're just going to keep borrowing. We're just going to keep, you know, more government institutions, more government activity. You know, we're going to help you. Well, when your help comes at unpayable debt, ultimately it's not a help.
It's not help at all.
No. So that's 11 through 15.
And I keep wondering, I love that eternal vigilance quote, because for me, I keep wondering where that vigilance is. This is something that everybody should know but doesn't. And then everything else going on that people just get hit in the face with daily. And I'm going, where's the vigilance? Where are you people? Am I alone?
You're not quite alone. The founders, they did great things for us in creating the Constitution, in creating the format, the foundation of this country, the foresight to say, yes, we cannot even begin to imagine what the future is going to look like. Therefore, you have the ability to amend the Constitution, but it can't be on a whim. That's why, you know, the requirements of amending the Constitution. But it wasn't so carved in stone that you can never change it. They left out one thing. And I don't fault them for it, but, you know, it's human nature. The people of that time, at least the founders and the people associated with them, they were so entrenched in fighting and surviving the war of liberation, the Revolutionary War, and going through the time of the Articles Incorporation, or not incorporation, the Articles, and then eventually coming to find out, okay, we can't operate this way. We do need a federal government. They're so involved, entrenched in this living that apparently it did not occur to them that people would forget. That somehow it would not be ingrained in our educational system. To the point that today, you will hear people talk about how the Constitution is old, it's passé, you know, it doesn't function. Now, if you ask them, how much of the Constitution have you read and understood? It would probably be limited to zero.
I'd say so.
The fact that it's been amended shows that the system works. The fact that if you think of how humanity has changed from 1790 to now, you know, 220 years, give or 230 years. You think about how humanity has changed compared to the prior 5,000 years. This has been an absolute whirlwind. From human rights to treating females as equal to males, as it should be, to allowing women to vote, to own property. And I would like to say this about, you know, the suffrage movement and the brave women that pushed it out there. But ultimately, I think we have to understand that the only people who could vote for women to be able to vote were men.
That's true.
This is the progress of humanity. But if you look at what's happened over the last 200 plus years, as I said, this has been a whirlwind of change. But let's understand how this change happened. Let's go back to the Constitution. Let's understand it. But to say that it's passé, it's out of date, it needs to live and breathe, it's living and breathing. The problem is, there's so much going on in our federal government that is not constitutional. Now, I think Jefferson started, and we are long overdue for one. It's called a republic review. The entire federal government needs to be reviewed to see if it's actually in harmony with the Constitution. And if it's not, we got to take care of it.
Yes, absolutely. We need to toss some of these, and I use the term loosely, people out.
Not so much the people, but a lot of the organizations that are just basically not constitutional. I tell you want to cut the federal budget? There's an easy way to do it.
Yeah, there's all kinds of organizations that are just sort of taking up money.
It's bring the federal government back to its constitutional foundings and moorings. Get rid of the non-constitutional agencies. Take the power to create money, return it to the benefit of the people. Once again, America will do what it has done since its founding. It's led the way. It's led the way to freedom, liberty, rights. And there's probably a reason why that beautiful lady in the harbor holds one big torch. That is that represents the light of freedom that America represents. That's it. Thank you.
All right. Well, what are we in store next week? Because hopefully everybody's following along and listening to this.
If I told you, where would the surprise
be? All right, it's true.
No. I'll tell you where we're going. Next week, we are going to spend the time talking about how the monetary system, our monetary system, really works. And the way it works today is it lies to us, it cheats on us, and it steals from us. To understand banking, you do not have to be, you don't have to have a PhD in economics. You don't have to be a Wall Streeter. Ultimately, all of banking comes down to the bookkeeping of banking. If you understand basic bookkeeping, you will understand money creation, money extinguishment, the power of it, and why that power must be returned to the benefit of we the people. That's what we'll focus on. And I will give you the quote from next week because it gives you an idea of – and I got to tell you, I love this one. I really do. In a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. George Orwell.
Can't get much better than that.
Yeah. It's time we get the facts out and let people understand why we need to change this, how we need to change this, reinforce the benefits that we get, and all the problems that we get to avoid as individuals and as a country. Because ultimately, and I look at it this way, I am an offspring of the greatest generation. We know who the greatest generation is refers to. I'm an offspring of that generation. What has happened during my watch? Because this is my watch. This is my duty. And what's happened is that I've watched my country become absolutely conquered and enslaved by debt. That's unacceptable. As an American citizen, it's unacceptable to accept that. Because if I'm not able to help correct this problem, what, as the founders would say, posterity, what the future holds for the future generations is unthinkable. It's not what our founders believed in. It's not what they dreamed about. It's not what we want. This is the most powerful system in the country. This system must be controlled by and for the benefit of we the people. That's what we'll be talking about next week.
That sounds beautiful, man. Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right, Alan. Well, we look forward to talking to you again next week.
I'm looking forward to it. I'll be ready.
All right. Until next time, be safe out there. And everyone, please check out AnomicAge.com for all things Alan Myers. We are pleased to welcome to the Anomic Age Mr. Rat Skates. Rat is a filmmaker, writer, and musician. He is most widely known as a director of music documentaries and his contributions to the thrash metal genre as the founding drummer of Overkill. Thank you so much, Rat. It is my distinct pleasure to have you on the program, sir.
Well, it is my pleasure to be here with you, my friend.
I'm so excited to talk to you. It's one of those things where I noticed you on Twitter, and I was like, holy, it's that, that's the guy? Holy cow, I was excited, and I started like combing through everything I could find that you were putting out, and I was very excited. I rewatched the documentary last night, Born in the Basement, and it just resonated so true with me and where I am now and where I was and, you know, on and on. It was amazing stuff.
Well, thank you. I mean, I really enjoyed putting it together, and when I did that, it was very much from the heart, and like all the things I do, I put myself in the position of a viewer or a listener. What I want to see, what I want to hear other musicians talk about. I'd want to hear them talk about things that no one else talks about, essentially. And I'm glad you enjoyed it. A lot of people have said the same thing, and I don't really think there's anything else sort of like that, you know, kind of a real behind the scenes, deep down, inner workings of what was going on. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of coincidental, or maybe it's not, but I was talking about sort of this DIY ethic on this show for the last few weeks, because we sort of grew up in similar situations and scenes. I mean, I grew up in the punk and hardcore and skate scene of the late 80s and 90s, and you know, it wasn't too unlike what you were talking about in the documentary and what you went through, where, you know, pre-internet, it really was this DIY ethic where people were making these hand zines that they'd pass out at shows and trading tapes and getting on the dialer and calling people up and down the East Coast or West Coast or what have you. You know, you'd have bands start out in New York and they'd make their way down to Richmond and Raleigh or Charlotte and Atlanta and Tampa, and just, you know, it's something I think that's so vital, but it's kind of missing now. And I was talking about it last week as it pertained to the social media nightmare where you got people getting taken off and their payment platforms taken down. And I was saying, you know, we got to bring it back to that. If we have to send in mailers through the U.S. Postal or send in documentaries or DVDs or what have you, just to sort of usurp this garbage system we got going on.
Yeah, I think, quite honestly, I think conservatives need to buy a large media operation so we don't get filtrated and censored and shut down by everyone who doesn't like to hear us tell the truth. That really disturbs them. Back to the DIY thing for a second. You know what? As we're older than when we were younger and just doing this thing and just all about having fun, It means a lot more. It means a lot more, I believe, just like what you're doing with your show. It's a real DIY thing. You're not in an enormous studio with engineers and everyone taking care of all the technical things. You're doing your own recording. You're doing your own promo. And it means that much more. And you do it because you're passionate about it, because you love it. And that's what art is, you know? The passion to create it, but also the passion to share it. And you do whatever it takes, man. That's missing a lot, especially right now. It seems, especially young, well, definitely young people from college to wherever, they're just being told and manipulated that you're just so good and you need to just wait for the right opportunity, and because you're so valuable, you're this and that, but you shouldn't have to hustle and work for things. It should come to you. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
That's not what life is, and that's a ridiculous attitude to have, you know.
Oh yeah, I feel you 100%. I mean, there's nobody here but me. Like I said on the first show, if it's great, I'm the problem or the solution. If it's if it's terrible, the buck still stops here. You know, I'm the guy doing all that stuff. So
yeah, exactly. It means that much more when you're seeing your project all the way through. So I have always said, wait a minute. Not I've always said, but recently in my later years here, you know, as life has gone on, that work actually is a gift. It's not a burden, and it's not actually something that is something you should run from. It's a gift. Work is a gift because you work hard. You give it 100%. Do the best you can every day. The results aren't necessarily up to us, right? The effort is up to us. The results are up to God and whatever He's going to want for you that day or not. But it's a gift. We go to sleep, at least I do. I work my ass off all the time. I love what I do, and I sleep really good at night. I gave it 100%. I feel good about what I did, and I'm tired. And it's good. It's a gift. It's fulfilling, in my opinion, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I feel like our whole society is so disposable now, you know? It's like, oh, well, this quit working. Let me just toss it. I mean, when I was a kid, at least, if something quit working, you tried to fix it. You tried to, you know, you get your dad or your granddad or somebody maybe and try to fix the fan or fix the radio or something. And now it's just like, let's toss it.
Right. Exactly. And I do that to this day. I don't just throw something in the garbage and what doesn't work to get a new one. I'm going to monkey with it for a little while. I'm curious. And maybe I can fix it and save $100 on something. And that's good. And I learned something, I could pass it along to someone else. Mm-hmm. Right. That's a good thing. That's not in any way a bad thing or being stubborn or anything else. It's a good thing. Work is good.
Absolutely.
Well, it's like what we're doing now or what you're doing with the radio show. You know, you've seen what I at least I try to put on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Now that's a whole other subject because right before the last election, I had people from what I remember anyway. I mean, people were retweeting what I put out in the hundreds, the hundreds of retweets, and it dropped off like overnight. It dropped off because I put something up that compared Hillary Clinton to Jesus, and it just dropped off. They didn't shut down my account or suspend me or anything. But they, through their filtration, they said this is resonating, and this guy needs to be muted. You know, really, not shadow banned, shadow gagged. Like, let's now let almost no one see his tweet.
Yeah.
And so I know it was effective. The thing that sucks, just like anything else you do, I do, anything that speaks the voice of truth is going to be shut down by the people who are threatened by the truth because they're controlling the pipeline. And the truth is what threatens them and their egos. So that's the problem. You know, I felt I've done some pretty decent things, you know, in different capacities, but no one sees them. It's a big problem.
Yeah, the same way. I've spent, much like yourself, I'll spend hours editing and putting together a show that looks great and sounds good, and then I'll put it out there, and 2 days go by, and I'm looking at the views, and I'm like, what the? I know more people are seeing this thing.
I know, and I'll tell you what, too. At least for me, it has greatly, to a large extent, taken the wind out of my sails, so to speak. You just like, I can really put a lot of time, just like you, into the content and making something, a really good production. It's really good.
Yeah.
But no one can hear it because of, and we can't do anything about this. If either one of us were enormous celebrities, there would be a huge outcry, you know, just like, we see every so often a conservative gets shut down, whether it's James Woods or whatever, right? But, you know, he can't just disappear into the shadows. You and I, they can push him through the shadows a little bit, and so they get away with it.
Yeah, big it's problem. Sad.
You know?
Well, for those of you who are unfamiliar with your work, could you give us a little Cliff Notes version of sort of what brought you to where you are?
Well, I grew up at wanting, like I think we just said, I don't remember, having fun and skateboarding, and I was a semi-professional skateboarder. I spent time playing drums, putting together a band, Overkill, and did what I wanted to do. I was one of the very few people who actually got to, like, sort of live the things I was dreaming about, and I had a lot of fun with that, and I did it until it wasn't fun, and the other aspects of the business, especially the business, got to me. You know, it's reality hits you, and you're like, well, I can't do this if this is how it's going to be, you know, through my whole career. But anyway, so continuing in the field of art, you know, I always messed around with video and filmmaking, and so I do that full-time right now as a cinematographer, as an editor. I have my own studio, and I love what I do. You may have actually seen some of my things on TV or not. I don't know. But, you know, and independent filmmaking and things like that. So there's some enormous talent out there. Like I was just saying, when they get shut down, you know Dinesh D'Souza, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Of course.
But the stuff he does is phenomenal. And look what's happening to him. Yeah. You know, and Michael Moore... Michael Moore, you know, back when he did all those things about 9/11 and everything, he's winning Academy Awards.
That's it, yeah.
You know, it's so slanted. It's unbelievable. I was working on this test. It would have been one of the, seriously, and I'm not saying this because I was the one directing it. I wrote a documentary or I wrote a script. It was called Welcome to the Dream, The Rude Awakening of Rockstar. And I stopped pursuing it because... I was starting to expose what the music industry was actually about, and how there is, and I, anyone who's listening, go to Welcome, it's still up, even though I'm not doing the film, welcometothedream.com, just put hyphens in between all the words, and you can see a 10-minute trailer on what I was doing with this thing. And I got a lot of, put it this way, I reached out to just about anyone you can imagine. I mean, I'm talking about big time musicians, to get them to talk about everything from obsessive compulsiveness and OCD to songwriting to being on the road, all the things that are not normally talked about.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, and it's like, as a musician, what would I want to see? This is the stuff I really want to hear about, you know, all this inside stuff. And, like I said, about taking the wind out of the sail, I got guillotined by agents and managers when they saw what I was really doing. They're like, well, because I couldn't get directly to the artists. Mm-hmm. Ted Nugent is one who Ted Nugent agreed to be on board, like personally.
Gotcha.
He was
going to
do it because, you know, he didn't give a shit.
He's
all about telling the truth. But the other, these other big artists, I mean, you name it. I mean, I reached out to just about everyone because I figured as these big mega artists, they'd have a good audience and people would want to hear what they have to say. But when agents and managers realize they'd have to tell the truth about the recording industry, they're like, well, I don't know, kind of like not definitely no, but it doesn't seem like something we're going to want to, you know, be involved with. If you get a lot of other big, you know, people on, I mean, even Mick Jagger, believe it or not, Mick Jagger saw a screening, or trailer, I should say. It's kind of a long story how he did, but he did. And it was like, this is really cool. But he doesn't make those decisions. His managers do.
Of course.
So it's just like anything else. It just links back to everything that is going on politically and in the media and fake news and all this stuff. You know, I was going to put out something that would have exposed it, would have been known, it would have made a huge impact on what musicians do in the future, the decisions they make and everything. They can't have that because it's all the truth. So it exposes them, you know. So,
yeah, I've seen that clip or the 10-minute trailer you're talking about. It's great. I've seen pretty much everything I could get my hands on yours on YouTube and the clips and everything, and they're just great.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
I remember, I can't remember if it's in that clip or a different one where it's you sitting down talking to, a group of like 5 to 6 musicians, mm-hmm. and they're just talking about the industry and talking about once you get there and all the stuff that you have to contend with. And that was one of those things where, I mean, 100% no patronage, but I was sitting there just thinking, man, I don't want this to end because this is some very insightful stuff. I mean, I'm not even a musician or in that world, but, right. you know, as a fan or from someone that's got a lot of connections to that, it's very insightful because you're sitting there, you know, like everybody else has seen the typical documentary where it's the rise and fall yeah. of fill in the blank, your favorite artist, where they started out from meager beginnings, they peaked, and then everybody got on booze and drugs and went to hell, you know, it's...
Right.
But this wasn't and that. I mean, it was a real behind the curtain kind of insight that I don't think most people get.
Right. Well, that's the thing. There's so much dysfunction in a lot of ways for musicians who want to be, you know, major recording artists and have to live the dream of touring and all that stuff. And it's never really been assembled, like where. People don't realize what they're getting into. And even if they did realize it, would they still say, well, I don't care, I'm going to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. But there's so much dysfunction. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like half insanity to want to do something, you know, like, you know, you're going to get ripped off at. You do art because you love it and you want to share it. You want to get on stage and play for people. I get it because I did that and that's what I wanted to do. But, the other parts of it, and then when you have the collapse and when you're on drugs and all these things that are linked together that you didn't understand in the first place, the big picture, you know? And I don't want to discourage people from making art. That's of course not what I wanted to do. I just wanted to realize what comes with it. You know, sharing art or when art meets commerce, you know, there is, you know, it's fire and ice. They don't work well together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, that's all. Just, and to try to stop, you know, tell musicians, young musicians, listen, don't stand up for yourself. And if you get a shit contract and your attorney who you think knows everything and is trying to, tell you or, find out what's in your best interest and stuff, isn't necessarily true. You need to ask questions and not sit there like, well, you're going to feel stupid if you ask the question because you should know what it is or what he's talking about. And that's not the case. You know, you're going to get hurt real bad and pay for it your whole life if you don't. Pay attention and ask questions and stop being so freaking passive about everything, you know. Without your talent, The lawyer doesn't have a client to represent. All these people in the industry don't have the income that you're making for them. So you got to stand up. It's easier said than done, but that's really at least think about think about it, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't agree more. I've always been one of those people that's terrible at, you know, I love the art for art's sake, but when it comes to selling it and being in one of those, like, bougie art, you know, we've all been there, those little art exhibits and, oh, it's a gallery showing and all this stuff. I'm like, that's not me. I like to do the art. I don't want to really hang out with those people.
Right. Exactly. There's a lot of fake people. There's a lot. But you can't stop the way God made us all. I mean, each person to have a certain ability or non-ability, and creative people cannot not be creative. You're wired to be that way. You'll hang yourself.
That's
it. If you don't do what you're designed to do, you'll go crazy. You'll end up, you know, probably killing yourself on drugs and stuff because you can't figure out life and you can't find anything, you know, some meaning to your daily, you know, what you're doing on a daily basis.
I couldn't agree more. I know we already sort of touched on this off the air, but I feel like both of us are kind of in that same vein where, well, we never really realized that it was rebellious or crazy to think the way we feel until it was, you know, like when I was younger, I never ever conceived of myself as being conservative or liberal. I was a skateboarder punk kid. And then
me too.
As I grew up and like we sort of talked about, for me, the huge changing point was the birth of my daughter. I mean, that was like people always told me that when I was younger, and like, when you have a child, you'll think. Then I was like, it's gonna be fine, whatever. But when you're sitting there holding that newborn child, you know, I think that the switch flips, and whatever you thought about before as being important, and whatever is now, you know, is two different worlds. But it's crazy.
I mean, it was the exact same thing for me when my first son was born. It changed my life permanently, forever. It gave it an entirely different meaning, and I would never, ever, I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's like, it's kind of like when life really begins is when you have, for me anyway, and probably for you, when you have a family, and now every day has a different meaning, not just about you or I, excuse me, going out, listening to music, going to shows and skateboarding and stuff like that, because it was all about just what we wanted to do and have fun. Now, it means, right, what we do has meaning to someone else, to their life. They're counting on us, and what a beautiful thing to be able to do that, to be a parent, you know? Wouldn't trade it for the world.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I'm 100% on that one. I wish more people took it like me and you did. I mean, I think it's this huge responsibility where I'm like, I can't F this up. I've got to maintain
it. I know. Well, because liberalism being the mental disorder that it clearly is, all right? That's not just like a clever or a cute little phrase. That's actually factually, clinically, right on the money.
True.
Okay? Well, yeah, I mean, it is. But, you know, liberalism and all its dysfunction tells you that, you know, everything that you do in life should be only about you. You're fulfilling your immediate needs and your gratification and all this stuff. And nothing else, nothing is more important than you and your personal happiness, right? It actually, it's not like it says, it dismisses anything charitable. It dismisses, you know, pure altruism, because it's always expect something, you know, I know I'm jumping around here a little bit.
Oh, go for it, man. I just like talking.
Like, liberalism, it flies a flag of being so caring and, you know, we're for diversity and we're the people who really, really care about other people. But there's nothing, there's no action behind that. It's all talk. It's all a charade.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it is. And anything that they claim to do that's so much more moral than the next guy and much more virtuous, all comes at the by strong arm of the government taking something from someone else first and redistributing it, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, right. It could be, that's, you know, every single Democrat that right now, I mean, you know, this is a really a deep subject, or not deep, but there's a disorder that right now that we're listening to people talk.
It's the
Democrats
insane.
Talk. They can't conceive of there being an objective truth and an objective set of morals. They believe they own it. What is objective is actually something that is based on their opinion. Now, they can't conceive of the difference of objectiveness and subjectiveness. They can't. Okay.
Absolutely.
And, well, you know what, John? I've thought about this. In fact, I think about this pretty much all the time. I really believe that if you remember, like, MK Ultra, mind control, all that
stuff? Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Okay. The degree of incoherence that liberals, whatever, progressives, whatever you want to call them,
yeah,
that you see that they have, it's like, are they under mind control? Are they under literally the control of evil or ETs or something unexplained? And I actually subscribe to that idea, and here's why. Because it is so drastic. And it's come about where it's so it's drastic and it's accelerated over in the last few years,
mm-hmm.
And you see that, you know, especially with all the people, all on the left is about just being as far opposite of Trump as they can. Trump has greatly improved America, so they're about greatly destroying America, and there's a disorder. And they can't conceive of themselves actually making an indirect determination on things. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. They're never wrong. They're never wrong.
I really believe they're being controlled. I really, really do. Because how can people be so absolutely incoherent? You listen to anyone from the left who goes on any news shows for an interview, which is very rare. But when they're presented, like, you know, you watch Tucker Carlson, who's fantastic, the way he does.
Sure.
And he tries. He tries so hard to reword the question so someone will get it, and they still can't actually answer the question. If you notice what they do, and I show this to, like, my kids who are, you know, all in their 20s now, but I said, watch this. Watch what's going to happen when this guy tries to answer the question. He reframes the question around his feelings and answers it from that vantage point instead of, like, an objective position. You know,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
True.
It's like, this is so messed up. It's like that everything is, and they say Trump has an ego. The actually very essence of the ego is that they own everything. They their ego is the gatekeeper of everything. So they don't like that question. They're going to tell you first how they feel about what you're talking about. And that the whole subject may be just something that is got to be changed because of how they feel about it.
Yeah, I agree. It's a weird psyop that I feel like it's going on. It's a weird psychological operation that people are being subjected to. And I totally agree. I think either, you know, it's some sort of weird MK Ultra, or the most of them are compromised with some sort of pedophilia or some sort of, you know, prostitution ring or something like that. But either way, I mean, I mean, looking at these people and listening to them talk, I sort of phrase it as they're uncloaking, you know, like sort of like the Starship Enterprise. They're going live. Like, they've always felt this way, but now they're going to say, oh, yes, we need to kill babies after they're born. Yes, we really want to take all your guns. Yes, we want to tax you 100% to fund illegal immigration and dot, dot, dot on down the line. And they're just sort of, they're coming out with it. And the sick thing is the American public is sort of still sitting there. In the trance from the television, I guess. I don't know.
I don't either. I'm perplexed. I'm perplexed too that it's kind of like you know, you have your difference, you have your two sides. You know, let's just say, for argument's sake, let's just call it Democrat, Republican, or whatever.
Sure.
And they're going at their different positions, obviously, on things. But it's so, when some of the things that they espouse and want us to align with are so absolutely insane, but we keep having these people on talk shows and keep sort of highlighting what we're arguing with insanity. So I wonder if that makes us the insane ones, because we expect all of a sudden them to like say, oh, you know what? I never really thought about it that way. I mean, I think you're right. That does, yeah, that would be bad. That'll never happen. It's never going to happen again, because they're too far into whatever is controlling them. So it's like we keep dancing with insanity, kind of like that. It's going to change. It's not. What's their positions aren't valid. Insanity and to kill babies after birth and stuff like that. And of course, part of that would be, and part of that dysfunction is that, well, they're not really babies, and all this other stuff. Now, no matter what you do, so, and they want science behind everything, like supposedly with global warming and all this other. That babies aren't actually humans. Well, they would be humans if you let them be born. You know, it doesn't, a baby doesn't, come out of the way. It doesn't eventually grow into a tree or anything. It's a human being.
That's it.
But it's a non-starter to argue that point. To present that point is embarrassing. That's not really a baby, all right, number one. And then we argue with that, or we entertain it. Like, well, maybe he has some point. Fuck, it's a...
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I think that we all need to collectively withdraw our consent from even engaging with these morons, because, I mean, it's kind of like arguing with the guy in the park who thinks he's Napoleon. Just don't talk to the guy in the park that thinks he's Napoleon. Just move on. Just say hey and keep walking, because...
Exactly.
You're not going to change their mental disorder. You're not going to change their, talking to Alyssa Milano, she's never going to be like, oh, wow, I get it. This is totally wrong. I'm totally incorrect.
They're never, because again, their ego is saying that it can't be wrong, and any opposition to what they think, we're evil, bigoted, racist, all these stupid words they use.
Mm-hmm.
Because like even Ronald Reagan said in some form or fashion that liberals. It's not so much of that what they think or say is wrong. They're just mad that there's other opinions at all. that there's a difference of opinion. And that, I mean, if that isn't ego, what is?
I never even thought about it that way, but I think ego is the big deal there. That's it. They don't want to admit that there's anything but their own opinion.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, three of the greatest words you could ever say was I was wrong, or I need help, or I love you. Those are all three great words put together. But the thing is, to just walk through life never considering that you may be wrong is that psychopathic?
It's got to be something. It's some sort of mental disorder. I totally agree on that one. These people are...
Yeah, it's outrageous. I think we are so unbelievably close to something, and I don't know exactly what that's going to be, to something happening, because there's been a lot of things through history which have been unbelievably bad, and you would think that would be the time for the second coming, or, we saw the final Antichrist or whatever. But right now, as a species, when people are this incoherent and this absolutely hell-bent on their position and hatred of other positions, That they even exist, I'm a conservative. Hey, fuck you. Well, you didn't even hear what I have to say. You're a conservative, so I hate you, period.
Yeah.
Just because I'm a conservative. But, right?
It's wild out there.
How about I'm not even if I didn't say, well, I'm not a conservative, but I have a different view. Well, there is no other view but mine, and you're wrong for thinking that there is. I can't actually, when I hear myself talk about this, I can't believe this is what's actually happening. Right now, in 2019, but it is happening. We're living in a circuit,
Oh, I'm right there with you. I can't believe it either. I have my own cognitive dissonance. I was talking about this on the other show, where me and my wife went to Target a couple weekends ago, and I was, you know, I felt like I was having PTSD leaving the store, and I had to psych myself up to go into the store because I knew what I was going to witness. I was like,
right.
I know I'm going to have to walk through a mash unit of humans that are just walking around clicking this little light device in their hand, and everybody's going to look obviously deranged. I mean, it's just too much sometimes.
Yeah. So look, is the evil one, I mean, is he actually influencing people? Does he have a significant control on what's going on? I believe that to be yes. Because everything that is happening is taking us farther and farther from actually who we are. And if you notice, too, this is what kills me.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a giveaway. Lately, you hear Nancy Pelosi, you hear Occasional Cortex, you know, whatever her name is. Them constantly using, well, it's immoral. It's immoral. It's, you know, this is immoral. And you know, to take away women's health care is immoral. Translation, you know, to not let us murder a baby because it's inconvenient is immoral. That's the actual translation.
That's the translation, yeah.
So, yeah, and so it's, you know, I've always thought to myself, you know, I said, you know, the evil one is cunning, he's clever, but he's really freaking stupid, too. Because to throw things out at, like, well, they have nothing left, so all that's left is now, they're claiming ownership to morality and throwing that out there. You're immoral. So it doesn't matter, the subject matter doesn't anymore. You're a bad person for disagreeing. We're the ones who will be the arbiters of morality, and you don't align with that, so you're a bad person. Unbelievable.
Yeah, there's always a litany of name-calling going on. No matter what it is, it's racist, it's homophobic, it's sexist, it's... trans species phobic or what? It's one of the or all of the above. It's just so weird.
Why are they so angry if they know that or if they really believe that they're these owners of truth? They're angry because we are putting out the truth, which debunks what they say. So they're angry. This is I believe they're under, you know, whatever control they're under is certainly. It's not. It's evil, you know. It wants people to go be at odds against each other.
There must be some sort of satanic element involved. I mean, there has to be. I don't know what else it could be. It's either that or some sort of total derangement, like the Salem witch trials, or something. I have no idea.
I know, but I think it's evil. I think that's how he's working. He's working through people because he's too much of a coward to actually show himself here. So he's using people just like he did in the garden, you know, and he's going to use us against each other and take away or have us look any direction at all except for God and for an objective set of standards. And that's what's happening. That's what I see.
It's got to be a bait and switch. It's kind of like the magician with the handkerchief in his hand. He's getting everybody to watch the handkerchief while he's moving the lever under the table. I think that's kind of a lot of what Cortez and Pelosi and all these deranged people they keep trotting out there. To your point before, it's a lot of people putting their energy on these Nimrods and still, you know, what's really going on's over here. Like, they really got the evil stuff going on here.
Yeah, I mean, how could we as a people who are free people, and freedom comes from our Creator. God gave us free will. Not a man. It wasn't taught in a school. Wasn't created in a laboratory. Free will comes from God. Independent thinking. And Bernie Sanders wants to take all that away. And he's what, second in the polls right now. And there's so many. Thousands and thousands of people who think this guy is the savior, the guy who wants to take everything away. I have these conversations sometimes, maybe you do too, with people who are so clueless. Well, he wants everything, you know, it's like you're talking to a kindergartner. He wants everything to be equal. Well, what it is he wants to define what's equal. How is that fair. You're all about fairness. How is that fair? Well, if you do what's right for everyone, how is it fair that he's the one who decides what's right? You know? This guy is one of the most evil guys on the planet, in my opinion. He's one of the biggest threats because people believe him when he talks, and they align with this psychotic bullshit that he espouses. It's unbelievable.
It's terrifying how many millennials fall for his nonsense. I think it's, again, the education factor where they don't know anything about reality.
Right.
So they see some boob up there saying, hey, free stuff. We're going to make school free and lunch free and everything free.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going, well, I'm not going to get a job anyway with this useless 4-year degree. So great. Might as well be free, right?
Yeah. Right. But what no one will say, no one. And of course, I mean, you know, I was really looking forward to it. He was on a Fox News, I think it was a town hall it was called.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
I don't think so.
But he just, okay, he had 45 minutes with the commercials and stuff. They threw him, the audience threw him these real softball questions, and he goes into these long soliloquy kind of answers because he likes to hear himself talk and stuff. But the question he needed to be asked, and no one asked him, say, you tell people you're going to get all this stuff for free, and I say, you're lying with that word because it's being taken from someone else. Money is being extorted from other taxpayers to pay for these things. How is that? Are you lying? And so he's going to give you some bullshit answer and all this. But that is the truth. And like you just said about the millennials, they're clueless about all this stuff. But can we tell them, you say, you don't understand, it's free, it's coming from someone else. And it could even be coming from you.
That's
if you're doing really well and someone else isn't, they're going to take your stuff. Is that okay? That's okay with you? That's stealing, it's called.
Yeah, that's not charity. That's theft.
It's theft. That's it. It's never worked. It can't work. It's tyranny. It's outrageous. It's freaking outrageous to entertain this as a valid possible position, a socialist position, communist, whatever you want to call it. It's really the same thing. It's totalitarian control of everything. How is that good for the country who fought for the freedom we have, right? That God gave us. You must have gave it to Bernie Sanders, right?
Yeah.
The freedom to own all our stuff and to make all our decisions and everything.
It really disturbs me that they don't seem to grasp that old Bernie is like a multimillionaire with several mansions and flying on jets. I mean, he's not some hippie fruitcake like living in a hollowed out tree talking about all this stuff, you know.
Right. So he enjoys very much the rewards of capitalism, but says it's evil because there's people, again, if he doesn't like wealth that isn't his, or doesn't benefit him, right?
Yeah.
And all that, every single solution, supposed solution, and everything they want to do, there is not one. And I wish this message could go far, meaning not necessarily from me, but someone where the left and these millennials would hear, you know, there is no position they have that doesn't involve taking something away from someone else. I've heard Catholics, not a lot, but I've heard a Catholic say, you know, but you know, Jesus said we're supposed to feed our flock and clothe people and, you know, give them things. But Jesus didn't say take it from somebody else.
Yeah.
And the conversation ends right there. Well, we should. Okay, but then if we should, why didn't Jesus then do that, try to do that, or tell his disciples, listen, we got to go and make some, we got to start extorting stuff, extracting things from people and redistributing it. He did. He gave us some information, right, that
yeah,
makes
absolutely
all the sense and still is proven to be flawless, because of course it is for all the reasons we know, but fundamentally, it doesn't matter if it was 2,000 years ago, it still holds true, okay? Yeah, so forcing, it's a non, like I said, it's a non-starter. There's non-starter. If you're going to just take stuff, that's your solution, is to keep taking things from people. I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't grasp that. I don't understand how people miss the parable where he says you need to teach a man how to fish, not just give him the fish. That's the one that kind of resonates with me.
Wait, say that again, the what?
I don't understand how they missed the part where Jesus said you need to teach a man how to fish, not just give him fish. I mean, that's what we need to be doing, is teaching people how to get their money, not just giving them handouts from the affluent people.
Bernie, the left thinks that other people should catch fish for you.
Yeah.
Right? and that's their ego. They should be in the position to decide who has what, not you. They'll decide that because they know better. They know more. They're morally and intellectually superior.
Oh, it does seem that way, and they seem to think that anyway. It seems so antithetical to what I'd always thought that liberal meant. It always meant freedom to do what you want and choose, and the state shouldn't be spying on you and taking your IDs and filming you with your smart, you know, all this nonsense. And now it's like, oh, that's okay. Well, it's all going to be fine now.
Exactly. Right. So again, freedoms come from God. Period. That's not a point of discussion. It's closed subject. Comes from God. So liberal, the way I see it, is the root word being liberate, right? Liberate something. What are you going to liberate? We were born with our freedoms. What are you going to liberate us from? Conservative means to save,
mm-hmm.
right? Conserve something.
That's it?
Liberal means that they should be free to just do what they want, take what they want from others. Hey, your life is yours and you do have this free will. Go ahead and do whatever, but you can't do it at the expense of other people. It's called stealing.
Yeah.
Can't do it. Yeah.
And don't force other people to like it. That's my other thing. Like, do what you want. I just don't want to have to like it. You can do it. Just do it over there.
Right. Now, you know, conservatives, they'll say, we're not diverse, right? We need to be more diverse and everything. So with them making all the decisions and defining what is diverse, it's now less diverse. So what these young idiots, they don't understand whatsoever at all is, well, there's going to be more diversity and more choice and stuff, but you're having now, instead of everyone being able to make their own choice, it's in the hands of Bernie Sanders and a few other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a globalist consortium, how is that diverse? Now, everyone must, they make the menu, and they tell you, you got to choose what's on the menu. And that's, you know, that's totalitarianism, right?
That's all it is. Yeah, it's absolutely global totalitarianism.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know if you wanted to get into this or not, but what sort of led you down the your path of faith?
My path of faith, you said?
Yes, sir. With Jesus Christ.
Well, a lot of that actually, like we were talking about, what reignited it? It was there, but it's kind of like the cafeteria Christian, the cafeteria style, whatever you call it, that only goes to God. So many people are, they go to God when they need something. They're in big trouble, someone's dying, they're sick, whatever. You know, I was like that too. You know, I had my belief and everything, but what really changed everything is nothing, thank God, that was traumatic. It was my first son being born. It changed everything. Every single thing. Life had a completely new meaning. So, I've never let that go. I can't let it go because now I'm living amongst truth and a purpose. And that's all the difference. And how can you have it? And you as a parent knowing the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
You can't, there's nothing more beautiful and fulfilling than that. And so how, you can't abandon it or just say, well, I would, thought it was cool for a while and I don't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how could you? Right. So, you know, God is there and God is the creator. Whether or not we want to, or other people, not you and I, but other people want to argue that point, believe it or whatever. And, people, because of their ego, and, you know, it could be Bill Maher, it could be any atheist, who their ego is so big that if they acknowledge a creator with a set of rules, then their ego can't do whatever it wants because it feels guilty. I've done something intrinsically wrong. And if I, so the only way I can feel guilty is if you don't talk about it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's the silencing of all these things. The things that they have to consider that would make them feel guilty, they have to dismiss that. Let's just say it's in the gay community, just as an example.
Sure.
Okay? When gay, excuse me, you know, people have had their preferences for as long as we know on their sexual preference. And so we used to call it being in the closet, gay, whatever. So mm-hmm, they yeah. were actually, the way I see it, is they were able to do what they wanted and engage with their sexual preferences. They're able to do that. Mm-hmm. But the ego says now, it's saying, the thing is, maybe we're doing something wrong here or something doesn't feel right. So if everyone accepts my sexual preference, then I won't feel guilty. Mm-hmm. So that's what it's all about. To me, all the things I see, and don't get me wrong, I am not in any way going after, there is a certain subset of the gay community that are more interested, way more interested. In fact, they're hell-bent on being accepted unconditionally no matter what.
That's it.
Right. And so it's not about being gay. It's about that you accept that I'm not a straight person. I'm not a... you need to accept that.
Yeah.
Period.
And
so
like
you're not
it.
Allowed to have your story. Yeah, well, it's like, look, I don't hate you, but I don't... It's not something I would do, and that's not something I feel is right. Okay, well, that's what they... Okay, but the thing is, go ahead and do whatever you want. It's your life, your decisions. Go ahead. You're going to do it anyway.
True.
So what should it matter if I don't think it's right?
That's the real disturbing sort of paradox of it all. It's like, not only do you have to... You have to embrace it and like it. I mean, that's kind of the deal with all this stuff now. Like, I just personally don't care. I just do your own thing. I'm going to do my own thing and, you know.
Right. Right. So I have to tell. I have to like what you're telling me. I have to like and accept.
Yeah.
You know these bumper stickers that the surfers have had for years or whoever that says coexist.
Yeah.
I'm gonna I should coexist with what's her name, Tlaib, and the other one, Omar.
Oh,
and the
yeah,
people
Ilhan
who
Omar
are,
and Tlaib. Yeah.
Yeah, who are making decisions for our country? Who hate our country?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's a very passive example, but there are obviously people who hate our country who are in our country, and I should coexist with that? I don't think so.
No.
And as Christians, you know, if we do consent to that, then we're saying it's actually okay. Well, no, well, you know, I didn't support it. I didn't go to one of their rallies. But the thing is, silence is consent.
That's it, man. God.
So when you speak, when you and I speak up and we get heard and we get shadow banned.
Yeah, you're reading right out of my brain. I'm serious. I had a graphic and a logo for the website that I never even put up on this incarnation of it, but it said, your silence is your consent. And it was, I can't remember even what the mm-hmm. image was, but that was the gist of it. And yeah, that's the way I feel. 100%.
Yeah. We are going to get condemned, things thrown at us, spit at. Whatever, whether you're wearing a MAGA hat or people just, if you speak up, they're so angry that cannot stop it. That doesn't make a difference. We should expect that. You know, there's hatred of the truth and hatred of anyone who presents the truth, especially, you know, in a Christian perspective, right?
Oh, man, it's so bizarre. I mean, just going back to what you said before, like, my brain having to comprehend, like, it's more incendiary if I go out of the house with a Trump shirt on than if mm-hmm. when I was, like, 13 and had, you know, orange hair with spikes in it and a leather jacket. I mean, that is more incendiary now than if I went
yeah.
back in time and did that, you know? It's so bizarre. God.
It is unbelievable. It is. there is such, if you notice too, and I got to keep going on about the ego thing, it's all tied
to
the
ego.
Please,
man, love it, I love it.
Well, people don't really think about this, but I do. The way I see it, for what, if you read into what liberals, what they're most angry and defiant about, is Donald Trump, him as a person, okay? Mm-hmm. They don't talk about great economy numbers and all that stuff. Of course they're not going to do that, because they don't. But what is the main thing is that he tells the truth, and he tells it in a way that is not sugarcoated. It's not so, it can't be taken one way or the other. Mm-hmm. It's hardline, direct, black and white, and that's what they hate so much, that he has no sugarcoating of everything. They hate that. They hate him. So anything related to him, they hate as well. But that's the main thing. What bothers them the most. But anyway, so this hatred for Trump is like they can't hide it. They don't try to hide it, and that's it. They hate him because he speaks the truth.
And it's so sick. I mean, to me, it kind of goes back to the education thing, because they've all been indoctrinated with this Frankfurt School of relativity. Mm-hmm. It's all relative, brah. It's whatever you want it to be. If you want to be a dog, you're a dog. If you want to be a woman, you're a woman. If you want to let immigrants in, that's fine. You don't need a visa. You don't need to go through any sort of check. Just come on in. Like,
yeah, exactly. And relativism in any, I mean, that's just, it's a clever way of actually, how can I say this? It sounds more sophisticated than it is. It's just, it's ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
To say, well, there is no truth. Or there is no absolute truth. It's only, you know, your feelings about truth. That's what the core of relativism. In that very statement, they just contradicted themselves enormously, right?
Yeah.
Well, then, yeah, you just made a statement which you believe to be true, that there is only opinion.
That's it.
You can't, as long as you have a pulse, and you're a breathing human being, you have judgment, and you have positions, and you... You make decisions, all right, and so it's just, but they don't think about that. So it's like this coexist and just let everyone. No.
It's all relative. There's no real right or wrong. It could be whatever you want it to be.
right or wrong. Well, then, but you're saying a statement which you believe to be right, that there is no right or wrong. You're not saying it because you believe it to be wrong. You believe it to be right. You know, it's a non-starter. It's insanity.
It's so sick. It's like that who's on first thing, the Abbott and Costello, who's on first? First, who's on second?
You know, I don't, with music and metal and all that stuff, it's something I'm really pretty far out of the loop on right now, because life goes on. I got so many things that I love every day that, it's just, and I loved what I did back then. It was fun. I'm very thankful I was able to do that. But I don't know. Maybe you do. Are there musicians, especially like in the metal world, who are taking a position like we are and like standing up, or are they just also following this stupid, campus babble about, all the stupid things they talk about? I mean, I don't know. Do you?
To be honest with you, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I just sort of term it as being retired. I don't really go to shows or anything. I think the last show I went to was probably 3 or 4 years ago, and I sat way in the back, and after the show was over, I got out.
and I, once in a while, there's a celebrity who comes out on Fox or somewhere and says something, and of course it gets repeated over and over. And then a lot of people say, why should celebrities, these actors or musicians, why should they be talking about politics? That's not what we like you for. That's what we paid you for, or that's not, you shouldn't be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
People have an opinion, and people, if you believe in free speech, truly free speech, they can say whatever they want.
Sure.
And if people want to listen to them, say whatever you want. And so some people could have some very intelligent things to say, and some people have very, very stupid things to say. I say let it all out there so people know who you really are and what your beliefs really are and everything. So if people are stupid enough to say, well, I really like so-and-so as a musician or an actor, so I'm going to align with whatever he says. I mean, I hope not. But, I mean, some people say some asinine, stupid things. But on the other hand, there's some good ones, right? Not that many, but there's some.
It is pretty disheartening. I feel like I'm not even really in close contact with anybody from that era. So I feel like if I got in a room with all those people I used to hang out with and go to shows with and skate with or whatever, it'd be like the Invasion of the Body Snatchers thing where they might like shriek and say, oh my God, you believe that?
Right.
And I kind of feel like it may be that sort of reaction from those people. Have you experienced anything like that, or is it a little bit more even keel on your end?
A little bit. You know what? It was years ago. I got off Facebook years ago.
Yeah.
I for all the reasons right now, which I'm glad I did, you know, because everything is coming into light. What Facebook, you know, was just a big surveillance company.
Yes, that's it.
But there were these people, you know, from the day that, you know, found me and are commenting on this and that. And just really, it's like, I'm, you know, there's a few times where I'm typing something back and I look at the clock, I'm like, I've been on this thing for like over an hour. And some people are on it for 8 hours a day. It's
yeah.
Like, I'm a prisoner to this. And you know what? People, they want to keep, because maybe of who I am or what I did, I should say,
mm-hmm.
that it's more, and maybe they can get a rap to me and show their friends little rats as I got them pissed off or this and that. I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah.
This is not how I'm going to spend my day. This is ridiculous. I mean, this is a waste of time. You know, it's like, but Facebook, Zuckerberg's an expert, and so are the other guys on how to do that and keep people there. And they want, that's what they want.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it came out not too long, or maybe it was a long time ago. I don't know. I just read it. But, you know, they use like addiction medicine psychologists when they're formulating Facebook and Twitter and all these various algorithms, because they want people to do just that. I mean, they want that little dopamine hit when you get the like and when somebody comments, you know, a nice thing to you. So you just sit there for, like you said, like 8-10 hours, and then you're like, oh man, it's midnight. What am I doing? I've been arguing with this idiot or some bot or something about a comment for 4 hours. I mean, jeez.
Yeah, exactly. And they're experts at doing that. And like you say, they hire people who know really how people can be manipulated, and they use these tactics, and they want that. They want you to stay on there. Of course they do.
Yeah.
And that's bad. That's not good. That's not, you know, nothing to do with social. That, you know, we're not talking to each other. You know, you could type anything you want. Say it to my face. That's another reason I can't stand that. You know, I don't want
to. I've really had to stop myself from commenting because I want to do what you were talking about. I want to get in that exchange with these idiots. And then I think, what am I doing this for? I could go hang out with my daughter. I could go sit in a room and read,
right,
for Pete's sake. Why would I want to engage these obviously mentally deranged people? I could go talk to that guy in the park that thinks he's Napoleon. Like, I don't want to do that.
Right. It is unbelievable, but Zuckerberg knows, you know, he's another guy, in my opinion, an extremely dangerous person, because obviously he has the wealth to do whatever he wants, but it's him and Gates and Google. They are so much about AI,
mm-hmm.
and AI. Did you see when Zuckerberg was testifying? Did you see any of that?
I saw bits and pieces of it, yeah.
I watched like the whole thing because I really, really, he's such a troubled person because he cannot, he's socially so unbelievably awkward. And so when he was in college, he invented Facebook, and so it got him sort of like, enabled him to be social, but not in a one-on-one human way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it worked well for him because he's a complete nerd who can't talk to people. And so he can't understand why other people wouldn't want what he's getting out of it.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I got comments and likes, and now I know where all the events are and these kind of things. So if it's good for him, it's got to be good for everyone else. So
mm-hmm.
the point I was going to make about him testifying, he answered a whole bunch of questions. Unfortunately, most of the people on the committee didn't. They're not up on, you know, older people don't really know the proper questions to ask and stuff. Yeah. But how do you determine this? Like, one of them was, well, how do you determine which hate speech? And Zuckerberg, without choice, is just like, well, AI is going to determine that, you know? And so the AI, right, is subjective or subjected to the programmer, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, we have algorithms, and we use a bunch of words and run it through a whole bunch of filters to see what the computer thinks is actually hateful. It's like, well, now, you know, here we go. It's like, hate actually is an emotion that people have. So now I'm not allowed to hate something? You know, the one thing is if I'm ruthlessly attacking, slanting a character, assassinating someone, that's one thing. But did you say you hate something? Well, I'm not allowed to hate it. You have to approve of it first.
That's it. It goes back to that same thing. You got to love it.
Yeah. Yeah. You hate the fact that I'm allowed to hate something is what it is.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Is this really happening?
Yeah, man. The AI stuff's kind of scary because, I mean, I've seen this for, you know, 10 years. They sort of keep pushing the little window over and they keep saying, oh, now you don't need to drive your car anymore because the car will drive itself. And you go to the store and you don't have to engage with the person because you can check yourself out. And then
right,
all you got to do is talk to the weird little monitoring box in your house that's listening to you and recording everything, mm-hmm. and say, hey, I want to listen to Overkill, and it'll pull up Overkill and start playing it for you.
Right. And so we're dependent on electronic devices. And when there is a solar catastrophe and the grid goes out, everything is disabled because electronically it won't work anymore. We're not going to know how to do shit. We're dead.
Yes, we are duly screwed. You say that again.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. So this isn't good. This is bad. Look, I would rather cut a piece of wood with a circular saw that plugs into the wall than a handsaw, of course.
Yeah.
But I still need to know how to use a handsaw in case the other one doesn't work. And so, again, when there's a problem, and there will be, it's a matter of time, where something happens, a big catastrophe, and we have to go back onto basic survival instincts, no one's not going to know how to do anything because they're dependent on all the electronics to aid them in everything.
And so what's go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's unbelievable. I mean, I don't know about you, but I see some of my kids or whatever, and then text, and some people, like, they text and it's all one word and they don't know that you can use a capital or a period. It's just like the one big, huge sentence. You know what I mean?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Can they read a book?
I feel like a real old person because when I text, I got punctuation and commas and the whole nine yards.
Me too. I do that too. I purposely will never, and it's just me, but I won't type like, how are you doing with the letter U? And are you with the letter R? I don't do that.
Purposely. It's irritating.
I don't care how long it takes me. Yeah. Now, yes, like you were saying before, so we're the rebels.
Yeah, it came to this. That's what blows my mind. Like, I kind of thought I was retired, and then the more I look at everything, the more I'm like, I guess I'm still the punkest guy in the room. I don't know. Like, I don't really feel like that anymore. I feel pretty settled and into family and hanging out with my wife and daughter, but
it's unbelievable.
Jeez.
I know.
It's sad. Well, it's scary, though.
It's very scary. It really is. So I think something big has to happen soon because the separation is more and more drastic and pronounced, but it's actually a good thing only in the sense that it's going to separate the people who are going to follow the truth and realize that they aren't the general managers of the universe. We are tenants on the planet Earth. We are not owners of all things.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I see the left as that. I think they're in enormous, enormous trouble unless they really get it together mentally soon. And it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. Like, they're incapable of it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, to your point earlier, I feel like we're sort of at the behest of Satan on a lot of this stuff. I mean, they say Earth is supposedly Satan's realm to foul up.
Yeah. He's playing games with us and we're going along. We're letting him. I don't know what it's going to take. I don't.
Because I was probably a lot like you. I mean, when I was younger, I sort of gravitated towards that dark imagery, and I never took it seriously. All the 666 mess and the inverted crosses and all that stuff. I mean, I got to say, when I was high school and such, you know, I was like, oh, this is just fun. It's imagery. It's evil and spooky. Like, I never really, at that point in the game, took it as being like, oh, this is a real thing. Like, this is, I shouldn't do this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I never did that either. That's why when we're in our 20s and the whole metal thing,
yeah,
we didn't gravitate towards metal because it was rebellious. We gravitated because we love it. Purely, yeah. Love everything about it, but it happened to be rebellious. So, you know, it was something that got a lot of attention. And then, of course, you know, Venom and Merciful Fate fans and all the demonic stuff. Yeah, that got attention too, but it was just cool. We were like, that's so cool. Now I look at it and I just say, it's not like I find it silly, but I say, well, you know what? I remember how I felt doing that at that age, and it was just fun. It was harmless.
Yeah.
You know, because we didn't go out. I mean, I certainly didn't go out and burn down churches or have satanic rituals or, you know, any of these things. It's just imagery that was going to get some attention.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the 80s especially, that was like the height of the televangelists and the Jim and Tammy phase and the, you know, 5-6 channels of that sort of stuff, so.
Right.
Do you think some bands took that seriously? I mean, I know, you know, like there's the weird black metal stuff from, I think, Sweden and Denmark and Holland, and right. There's a lot of that where they actually seem to really be taking it literally. I don't know.
I think they're silly, silly little imbeciles, what they are. That's really.
Yeah.
That as much as they want everyone to see that they're really, really serious about this, and go ahead and do what you know, go and have your black mask or whatever the stupid things you do.
Yeah.
You want to know something? When someone goes boo in a dark room, you still get scared just like the next guy.
Yeah.
So you're not this figure of evil that and you're so, you know, the prince of darkness. Well, you know, give me a break. You're just the guy who's scared of the same stuff like everyone else. And stop pretending that you think this it's silly. It's just silly.
Yeah, I don't want to open something I can't close. That's where I'm at with all that stuff, so. Seems very freaky.
Yeah. So what else? What else is going on?
Man, I don't know. What can we do about all this? That's the loaded question, the biggest question of all. Like, I don't know, man. I'm trying to figure out a way to market myself without apparently showing up on any sort of social media.
I know, and so how can you do it? And I did some YouTube video. I've done a few things with the intention of and I think you said you saw some of these things.
Oh yeah.
With the intention of, I actually did something about Mark Zuckerberg. I thought it was pretty clever. Where he's did you see it? Maybe.
I'm sure I have. I feel like I've watched just about everything on your channels. I've tried to anyway.
In the work that I do in editing and stuff, I use a program a lot called After Effects, and I could animate fairly well, and so I took a still image of Mark Zuckerberg, and I made him talk.
I did see that. Yes, I did.
All right, I made him have a conversation with me that it would be the perfect interview because I would, you know, someone should ask the questions that I would ask, and I believe I made him answer me back in the way he probably would have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't go after the Democrats or anything like that, or Hillary Clinton, but I went after something that is obviously, put it this way, it's like got no place. All my stuff used to have thousands and thousands and has nothing. So my name has gotten around, and I hope, and probably to some extent yours has too, and I hope it doesn't get worse, that you know, watch out for these guys. Watch out for John Age. Watch out for Rat Skates. Shut them down. Mute them.
Yeah.
Let them be. Don't have to delete them, but we got to put a, you know, really muffle their voices because they're troublemakers for our agenda, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we do it? I don't know. I wish I had that answer because we have obviously the right content to bring out, but how to get it to the audience when they they're shutting you down? I don't know.
Yeah, have you gotten a lot of flack, I guess, from the quote-unquote critics out there about where you're at now?
Well, when you say critics, you mean music critics?
I guess, like music critics or video, audio, you know, the work you're putting out now, are people going, yeah, Ratskates, the guy from Overkill, and now he's totally lost his mind because he believes in God and he's putting out these conservative videos. And
a while ago, it was maybe 5 years ago or something.
Yeah.
Some website picked up on something I did, a TV spot. It's kind of a long story, but it was like a 30-second spot. It was on. I put it on Fox News, and I also put it on MSNBC and CNN. It was a Christmas thing.
Okay.
And they, long story short, you could take it off to go to the YouTube channel. But they, someone, I think it was maybe one of the guys who runs Blabbermouth. If that's still even around, I don't know. He just couldn't believe that, you know, I was this conservative and I had these things to say. And so the left found out about it. And all they did is like this one video got like 50,000 plays in a couple of days. And all they did was attack me as a person. Oh, look at the way he looks. He's an old hippie. Nothing about the content of what the video is about and the message, because there wasn't a point that necessarily couldn't be argued.
Yeah.
So they just went after me as a person, like they do everything else. You don't like the message, you go after the messenger. And so that's what they did. And the music world, I'm sure there's a lot of, it means absolutely nothing to me. But I am surprised that there are people who, in the metal circles, you know, we're supposedly have this kind of mindset about, you know, being anti-establishment and stuff like that, and they're going along with all the establishment stuff. I don't get it, you know. So yeah, I've gotten a lot, but that means I'm effective.
Yeah, that's
true.
I get
a lot of feedback. Right.
Definitely over the target if you're getting that much heat for it. So.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the last thing that I would ever. That means anything. It's like, if anything, it's going to make me want to do it even more, you know?
Oh, I feel you. Right? 100% on that one.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So what else?
God, I don't know, man. We could talk for a while. I said, I feel like there's so much to cover, I don't even know. We've hit the main points.
We talked about some main things here, important things. The most important things that there are right now, which we talked about a lot of them. And, so I think it's great. I really do. That, especially a lot of people from the 80s that I know back in the day and this kind of stuff, that very, very seldomly, but once in a while, I'll catch something that, you know, Overkill's playing a show, or this band's doing a reunion, or whatever. And the fact that everyone is, you know, in their mid to late 50s and still doing it, I think is fantastic. I question sometimes that it doesn't really matter, that if some of the musicians are scared to sort of step off that, you know, whatever level of pedestal they believe they have, and be a civilian again. Well, you know, I'm a landscaper now. I did metal, and yeah, I'm a landscaper now. So what?
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy, and I can make my own choices in my life. My fans don't have to keep me manacled to playing a guitar in front of a Marshall stack through my whole life. You know, I can make my own decisions. So I don't know if some of the it's stubbornness, or they really want to keep doing what they're doing. I have no idea, but I don't know. I hope there's people that are taking more of an interest in the events of the world and things like we're talking about, because it's going to affect them if they don't. They're going to go down if they don't. What you don't know will hurt you, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you kind of brought that up, because that's something that's kind of been in my brain for a while. I mean, I've gone to see a few bands. I hate to say reunion show, or like the, you know, the cashing in kind of show, but I mean, I've seen bands that I saw when I was a kid, and then I've seen them as an adult, and, you know, I hate to say that it's, just not the same. I mean, it's not the same because I'm older and obviously the crowd's different and they're older and so forth and so on. But I guess in my heart, it doesn't feel the same. It's kind of like, I guess like the cringe factor. You sort of hate to see a lot of this, you know, like, man, I was hoping they were doing something else. Kind of like you were saying, you know, it's great to see this band again, but at the same time, it's like, man, it's sad in a way to see the guy in his mid-50s that's still wearing the spandex and the stuff and, you know.
Right. And, I mean, and so if they're doing it because they just absolutely cannot stop doing it and that's their passion in life, they're going to do that to the grave, then I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Great. But don't kid yourself if you really think that or you are afraid again to step out of that spotlight. And the spotlight isn't bright like it used to be by any means. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the first thing you do when you go to see a legacy band? The first thing any person does, if they're honest, they come on stage or see a new picture, they go, wow, they're old. That's what people say.
Yeah.
The first thing. So it's kind of like, you know, is that, I don't know, it doesn't seem like anything that I'd want to keep, you know, every time I get on stage, I can move less and less, and I have less hair, and it's like, you know, again, if you want to do it, God bless you, but otherwise, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff in life that maybe you're missing out on. I don't know. Each his own.
Yeah, man, I know this is a total different can of worms, but I mean, is a lot of it just the music industry where a lot of these bands that people, at least in their own mind's eye, think, oh, they've got it made. They had a great hit in 85 or 90 and they're just set. But then the reality of that is, well, they may not be because they may have just been getting a little bit of monies from touring and they are sort of expecting this grand check to be existing. And then they get off tour after 5-10 years and they're like, whew. Wow, I'm 35. Yeah. Now what? You know?
Exactly. Well, there's a whole misconception about because someone has a song that was popular at one time or whatever that, oh, they must be like doing great and drive a really nice car and big house and all this stuff. Because, but that's so far from the truth. That can happen. It can. You have to sell an enormous amount and, of course, own all the publishing and whatnot to the song to actually make a lot of money, but there is that's just the sort of paradigm or the preconceived view of that, you know. But that's not excuse me, not necessarily true. I don't know. I know I don't have any hit songs. I could say that about. And you know what's funny? Coincidentally. I opened the mail today, and there's a statement from a company that Overkill is on like live DVD or something, and I have a couple songs on it that I didn't play on it, but I'm a writer of those songs, so I'm supposed to get a royalty.
Okay.
And they send me one of these every couple of months, and there's a rubber stamp across sideways in red letters that says, royalties will not be paid for any amount less than $100. And they show you on the statement how many units sold, like, 5 units.
Gotcha.
That. What's your accumulated royalty? It's like 14 cents and stuff. And it's like, so what you're basically saying is I'll never get paid.
Yeah.
Because at this rate, 14 cents, you know, so that's like, you know, 65 cents a year. I'm not going to recoup $100 to ever see a check, you know?
That's insane.
Yeah, and but that's actually true. And these are the kind of things where a lot of young people would just, oh, really? I can't. Yeah, but that's the truth. And they send me this statement every whatever, I don't even know, a month, maybe 3 months, and it costs them 50 cents to mail it to me.
Good
to
grief.
Say they're giving me nothing.
That's so ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
That's sad that you didn't get to finish that documentary, because I think that's something that the average kid, you know, even the average like 10, 12-year-old kid that's going to be like, oh yeah, I'm going to make it, I'm going to do this, that, or the other. They're not going to realize that they may be getting that check too for the 14 cents or whatever.
That's right. Exactly. You know what I realized when I was trying to do this, and I hope some people can actually watch that because I think would agree that it would have been a very important documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Being that The other one I did, Born in the Basement, is all about DIY, and I'm still like that. That's just how I am. Like I said, I like to work and everything. But when I was trying to put together this other documentary, one of the big things, the biggest thing was I have to fundraise for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the most unartistic thing, the most uncreative thing you could do. Now I've just got to try to solicit money and see if I can get someone to sign it, you know, or a grant and these kind of things. And I'm spending so much time on that and nothing on the actual content.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this is another reason I can't keep doing this. And so as much as DIY, and this is a reason why I think music is not what it used to be. And I would say, when I say not what it used to be, I think there's talent out there. I think people can record their own stuff and do their own, you know, put it on any of these websites and everything. You're spending an awful lot of time on the mechanical end and not the creative end. You know,
mm-hmm.
Led Zeppelin, they spent all their days with guitars in hand and playing, and their lives were consumed with their art. Now it's much less, and it's more, you know, booking our shows and making our shirts and all that stuff.
Yeah.
When I did it, it was cool, but it was a little bit different, too, because the goal was to get, you know, signed to a big label. We did that. But Welcome to the Dream, that's one of the reasons I can't keep doing it. You know, it's going to take me, you know, I need a good, you know, six figures to do it right,
mm-hmm.
at least. And to do all that fundraising, and anyone who's done that knows what it's like. It sucks, you know.
Yeah.
It really does. So it's too bad, because I wanted to do it not as a documentary as much as I think that the word they finally came out with is called a docudrama, where I wanted to have, like, people actually acting in it to
mm-hmm.
show, like, a scenario, but also have commentary from musicians to explain what's going on and how that's true and, you know, this kind of... But it's gone. And I don't know if anyone will ever do it, because, again, you know, you're exposing the music industry. And the artists aren't going to bite the hand that feeds. So, or the managers aren't, anyway.
Yeah, that's sad, because that's definitely a commentary that needs to be out there.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Whatever. This is part of what in life we have learned to accept, you know? Accept the things you cannot change, you know?
And, yeah, that's it.
Okay, so maybe it would have been great, but I tried and tried. I have no enthusiasm for it anymore at all. So, you know, we'll move on to the next thing. It's not like, well, I can't do any more creative things. There's endless amounts of creative things I'll be doing until I'm dead. So just do another one.
I mean, I can relate, because you don't want to put out a half-hearted piece of mess. You know, you want to put out a professional thing.
The thing that's hard to swallow still is that you know, I spent some money on shooting the things I did, you know, between equipment I had to gather and sets and things like this. And, you know, I lost $20,000 on it. I'm definitely more like 30,
jeez.
You know, on something that'll never happen.
Yeah.
But fortunately, I married someone who will support me artistically to the end. As much as it sucks, we could use the $30,000. It's like, well, it was... We put everything we could into it, and it didn't work. Oh well.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
why I keep the website up, and there's a trailer around and stuff like that. So, what could have been, whatever.
I feel your pain. Well, not on the $20,000 in, but on the wife conversation. Like, are you sure? Like, you want to? I was like, yeah.
I mean, you're investing in something that has a purpose, and you're going to give you some satisfaction and fulfillment, and you got to do it.
Yeah.
And you know what? Success always involves some kind of a risk.
True.
But if no one ever tried, then nothing, we'd never have any of the great things we've had. You know, they all involve the commitment of time and money, and so. Hey, you know, we're only here for a short amount of time, right? And we go back up where we came from.
I always say that just with this show. I mean, if nothing else, it's allowed me to speak to other people like yourself and not feel so isolated, because I felt forever, I was like, wow, I'm the only person that must be smart in North Carolina. I don't know how this is possible.
Yeah, it's weird, but, you know, I guess sometimes also you don't know. Obviously, the people who listen to your show are like-minded, I would say, for the most part anyway, because they continue to listen to you, but it's not like, you know, you're going out and having coffee with these people every day.
Oh, yeah.
Either. Right?
That's a media trick as well. I think the media kind of wants anybody of even the least bit conservative bent to sort of feel, oh, well, I'm the only one. I better just go along to get along with this whole communist agenda so I'll fit in with the group.
Well, exactly. That's exactly right. And obviously, we see we're ostracized now if we don't do that. And the kids, young kids, millennials, and college campuses are so willfully ignorant, I think, about just being spoon-fed something and told to believe it, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And there's never one to question, you know, to question it. And there needs to be.
Yeah, if we could go off on a whole diatribe on academia, that's the whole nightmare for me. Because that's all it is. There's no dissenting opinions. There's just the pablum from the primarily communist people pushing the same agenda.
Yeah.
And then their assembly line at the end is the same byproduct. It's the same SJW.
Yeah.
We got to have everything free. Where's mine? I got all this work. I got this four-year degree. I need to be making $50K a year and living like they do on the TV, right? And, you know.
Right. Right. And when someone comes along who's invited to a college under the guise of free speech, like if it's Ben Shapiro or someone like this,
mm-hmm.
right? And they have these, they shut them down and there's protests and all this other stuff. He can't even talk.
That's it, man.
So, right, because he'll say something that contradicts their narrative. It's that simple. If Ben Shapiro or any of these guys are all full of bullshit and lies and mistruth and everything else, then let them talk and let the audience figure that out. But that's mm-hmm. why they can't. Because he'll debunk all the bullshit.
That's it. Know?
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
But, oh, no, they say, oh, well, you know, he's full of hate speech and hateful rhetoric and all this
That's stuff, it, man. You know? It's all hate speech and racist and...
Yeah. The truth is hate speech.
Intolerance.
But the truth.
Intolerance, right. I guess.
It is unbelievable. I don't know.
Jeez. Well, where can everybody find everything there is to be on Rat Skates?
Well, I don't really manage... I mean, I have a website, ratskates.com, and you can see some things there, some trailers of films and links to other stuff, and of course there's the YouTube stuff, because you won't get it if you just randomly search because of my name.
True.
But I'm not really even updated anymore, because it's kind of like, it has a lot of music stuff, music and things kind of related to everything we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Ratskates.com, and then, you know, there's the YouTube channel. I'm not on Facebook. Send out tweets once in a while. Once in a while, I get like kind of probably like you send a bunch of them out, and kind of like, I don't know, I don't see here anymore.
Yeah, that's about it, man.
Yeah, so I hope maybe someone enjoys some of the things that I've done, because I enjoy making them. So
definitely,
and I thank you very much for reaching out to me for an interview. I haven't done one in a little while, probably
Absolutely.
For a few reasons, but but thank you. It was really a nice conversation. And I hope everything for you grows and grows and grows. Because I've seen you have some really good guests on, too. Some very intelligent people. That is great.
It's tough. I'm trying. It's the whole DIY thing. I keep trying to con my wife into helping me. It's like, man, I'm wearing like six hats here sometimes.
Yeah, but the thing is, you're doing this not to push your agenda. You want to push the truth.
True.
What you want to do is right. So it's a beautiful thing. That's a gift from God. That's what we're supposed to do. And so you're doing that. Stand up for the truth.
Thank you, sir. Well, thank you so much for being on. If you'll stick around for about 2 seconds, I'll wrap this up and I'll talk to you offline for a moment.
All right, John. Sounds good, man. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Thank everyone for joining us today on the Anomic Age. You can check out all the guest links at anomicage.com, so please check those out. And remember, you can't do everything, but you can do something, so please get out there and try to make a difference.
Until next time, we'll see you.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to anomicage.com. That's anomicage.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm gonna go get some more money.